Blog Talk Radio.
Hello everyone, once again, this is Fanatic Radio here on blogtalkradio.com. Mike was muted, rookie mistake, because Notorious Influence and Model Garden, we have done something very interesting today, since it's our Halloween episode. We can't really dress up on the air to tell us what we are, but Flo is a Devils fan. I am a reject soccer player that never got signed by a club, but yet wears apparel. But we've done something that a good friend, the late, great CED, Chris Alzav, said, for his final request of Sports Zone. He always wanted to do a tavern show.
Yeah.
So, here we are, live in the tavern, hence the background noise.
Yeah, not quite the same thing as doing the show, which would have required a whole lot more.
Like Mike and Mike at the Super Bowl.
Yeah, like that was never going to happen. And Chris, he never was going to admit that it wasn't going to happen. Now, I'm running Sports Zone, which is just a disaster on itself, and this
tavern show
will never happen, so... At least it's kind of a nice consolation prize.
It went well. So we'll do this for Chris Aldab. We're in the tavern. I guess we're probably getting random shout-outs from people passing by.
Yeah, I don't know about that, but it's possible.
But you can call in at 646-595-3137. And B-Flow, we'll start off with something. We started off Sports Zone last night with a baseball. Quick sound clip, though, from the Kung Fu Panda, Pablo Sandoval.
You dream and be part in the World Series. Calm down myself, get a pitch I can hit. He got a great stuff, so I just try to get a pitch I can drive the ball. We're in the home plate. I'm making a lot of adjustments there, It's one of the things when you're smart, you need to learn what's your game. You need to know what's your game, so that's what I've been doing.
So he comes the third player ever in history to hit 3 home runs in a World Series game?
Yes, he was... joins the ranks of guys like Babe Ruth, Reggie Jackson. So,
right, he joined Mr. October. You said that last night.
Yep, and, somebody like that, it's just such, it's history, and he gave the bat that he hit the third home run with, because the one that he hit the second one with broke. So he hit the third. So it wasn't one that hit all three, but hit the third, and that was donated to the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Oh, shout out to Cooperstown there, but they apparently won again last night. Up 2-0. They are the hottest team in baseball right now, aren't they?
Well, considering there are only 2 teams left in baseball. Last night, not as much of the offense, but a little small. Well, they had a bang-bang play with a bunt that just barely went fair. And there's a lot of small ball, great pitching performance by Madison Gardner. So now it's a series tilt back to Detroit for tomorrow night. It is Giants. Definitely have the advantage, although the Tigers still feel confident. They are heading back home, it's huge, this game 3, to get a win. Every game's a must-win, obviously. But for them, this is basically make or break.
Especially the first route, 9-1 on, I believe it was Wednesday night in Game 1 of the World Series.
Yep.
And relatively low scoring last night, but still 2-0. But luckily, I think for the Tigers, they got the game done. They got them done in San Francisco. So, going back to Detroit, obviously no Justin Verlander, though, until later in the series. But do you think, you give a shout-out to Barry Zito last night on SportsZone. Do you feel like he has been one of the big reasons why they came from behind to beat the Cardinals and to get that Game 1 World Series win?
Your
boy Zito.
Oh, yeah, Zito, yeah. So, it was interesting going in Game 1. They were throwing Zito on, though, because their series went 7. And so, in Detroit, they ended in a sweep. So, Detroit was able to set their pitching staff, have Verlander go Game 1. Well, the Giants, they kind of had to scramble a little bit. They had Barry Zito. I'd been pitching very well. But, you know, just looking at it, you would think advantage Detroit. But not so fast, my friend, as the great Lee Corso would say.
I signed a 2-year deal.
Exactly. There you go. And the thing is now with Giants, was it after once they got that Game 1, they defeated Verlander Game 1, then they had the rest of their pitching rotation set to go. So now we now know that, because then they had Bumgarner go last night. So their rotation's set. I mean, Detroit's rotation set as well, but Detroit was not able to take advantage of having that long time off.
And still have Tim Lincecum pitching, don't they? Is he pitched next game?
It'll be either Lincecum or Kane. I will check that out.
Preparing for that, do you think the Detroit will probably going all out as soon as they get to Detroit? And what better person to go after than the Freak, who has been playing relatively well September and October months?
Yeah, he's been really struggled this year, but once they started using him as the bullpen, took him out of the rotation, it really seemed to get back.
Calmed him down.
Yeah, he really
had a 5.8 ERA or something like that.
Yeah, he was a mess. And a lot of people thought because of his throwing motion and how it puts a lot of stress in his body that, oh, maybe it was his third. Beginning of the end. But now he was able to get back his confidence, get back his stuff, and yeah, so tomorrow night it'll be Ryan Vogelsong's pitch very well. It'll be a pretty good, interesting matchup of Ryan Vogelsong for San Francisco and Anibal Sanchez for Detroit. Both have pitched very well this year, or especially in the postseason. They both have ERAs below 1.5. So we could definitely see a potential another low-scoring game. Comerica Park is a big ballpark, so we could be seeing another low-scoring game and maybe the reliance on small balls.
All right, but so the World Series will probably be over by the time we have our next show next week, which we'll get to later in the show. We have a very interesting show we're going to try to do. But I guess you should take the side of the Detroit Tigers. If you are Jim Leyland, the old Silver Fox, what will it take for your team to come back and win the World Series?
Well, really, the big thing now is that they need to get their lineup cranking well, because they got a good pitching last night, but the lineup has not been there, and especially when you get shut out, their line, which was very solid against New York, they were able to perform well in the clutch scenarios, but now with the offense, it was just been missing thus far. But now you get the familiar ballpark, you're heading back home, you get the day off, head back to Detroit, and now I think that they can end up having the confidence, they're back at home, and I think they're going to win tomorrow night.
All right, I'll take the side of the Giants. So, you think, I guess I'll ask you right now, do you think Detroit or San Francisco win the World Series?
It's going to be San Francisco. A 2-0 hole is way too big to come back from it. And so this is why Game 3 is incredibly important. Because then you make a 2-1, then it's anybody's series. If it's 3-0, it's over. So it's huge to get a win tomorrow night.
And, of course, I'll take the side of the Giants, who I think is going to win the World Series as well. Yeah. Because one, momentum is clearly on their side. They have won, 5 consecutive games now, dating back to the NLCS?
Yep.
And they came back in dramatic fashion, beating the Cardinals, who were riding a pretty high wave of momentum themselves, being the wild card and getting in. Up 2-0. Like you said, if they could steal a win on Saturday, that would be crucial for them. I think they probably will. If Tim Lincecum pitches Game 4, he could easily have a chance to sweep the Cardinals, or sweep the Tigers. But their hitting has been phenomenal. Kung Fu Panda, 3 home runs in 1 game.
Yep.
He was batting, I think, as high as 800, because he's been hitting so well. He went 4-for-4 in Game 1. and all the names that Dylan Schoep mentioned last night. Plethora of Giants players who slipped my mind. But Buster Posey, your boy, someone you said did really well. He's been doing well this postseason, hasn't he?
Yeah, he and he's still looking to be the favorite for to win MVP. And a lot of this year, he's
been... I mean, he's comeback, NL Comeback Player of the Year.
Yeah, so with Posey, he, huge part of the lineup, and he's a big hitter. Yeah, he's a very high average. He's got power, and he's good at driving and runs as well, everything you need. And he's a catcher, so it's not something you see quite a bit of strong hitting catcher. But this lineup, you know, because he's showing, it was definitely the focus was on Posey, but Sandoval's got a big bat. But really, you'd see with them a lot of small balls. So I think that you with them, you see more games like you did last night than against on Wednesday night when that power really came out.
All right, so do you have the Giants in what?
I think the Giants, I think they're going to give, I think they're going to lose tomorrow night. And, but I think this will go to six. I think the Tigers will win games 3 and 5.
Yeah.
And, but it'll be clinched game 6. At home for San Francisco.
Game 5 would have Verlander back on the mound.
Yes.
Okay, makes pros. I'm going to say the Giants in 5. I think they could. I think Detroit will possibly get game 4 or 3 or 4 back, but then lose 2. Because usually in professional sports like this, a team does have all the hype going back to their home crowd to do well, and then they sort of get back to reality, and the Giants in reality has been phenomenal. So those are our World Series predictions.
Oh,
yeah. Hope you're right. Hopefully the Giants win, so Tyler Tomeo looks like the having us eat some humble pie, as we doubted him last week on the show.
Humble pie.
Very good. We're in the tavern right now.
Hey.
So, first ever, our second ever off-site show from the studio. First time we ever did it was good old John Gardner, flesh and blood of myself. We did it live from Dallas, the very first time we were on Blog Talk Radio.
There you go.
We're going to move to our NBA segment, as big news broke yesterday. David Stern famously announced his resignation in 2014.
It's a great run. It will continue for another 15 months that the league is in, I think, terrific condition. Even at this board meeting, we reviewed the finances. We approved new ownership from Memphis. And generally reviewed the state of the game, which is at the center of everything we do. And I said that I like to think that I did an adequate job, but one of the things that I did best was to provide a successor that would be able to take the kinds of things that we now look at as huge growth opportunities, international, digital, television negotiations, and have somebody in place with an extraordinary organization that has worked together with him and with me to take us even to the next level.
I can't begin to express my gratitude for all the NBA has done for me over the last 20 years and all that it's provided me. As Glenn said, there'll be plenty of time during the transition to lauded David and all the incredible things that you've done for the NBA and for sports generally. I think there's no doubt that you'll be remembered as the best of all time as commissioners go, and you've set the standard, I think, not even just for sports league commissioners but for CEOs in any industry. And it's been, of course, an honor to have worked for you these past 20 years.
So you said retirement, not resignation.
Yeah.
I got my terms messed up. Sorry about that, but that was David Stern and future commissioner Adam Silver?
Yep.
He's the guy that helped a lot with the player negotiations.
Yeah, and he's the guy you'll definitely know if you watch the NBA draft. He does the second round picks. And the crowd's always, they love to, you know, mess around with him. They call it, they chant Sexy Silver. And, yeah, it's pretty funny. But, yeah, for David Stern retiring, people, you know, everyone will remember him as a villain, and there are definitely a lot of negative aspects of his tenure. But people not enough remember him as a marketing genius and really a visionary for the League of Basketball. Taking a bet, because, and it's funny that Silver said that, oh, he's going to be remembered as the best NBA commissioner. If you look at the previous NBA commissioners, they're all morons. They had no idea what they were doing. They were hopeless. David Stern, it was really, I mean, he's definitely a genius and done a brilliant job, even with all the negatives. But really took the lead because the league's had a strongest run since he took over. Revenues are up 24-fold. TV ratings are huge. You got big TV deals that made a lot of money for the league. So definitely a positive, I would say overall a positive legacy.
Yeah, I said it last night. He's a very good businessman in regards to setting down the dress code, which was huge. I mean, big at first, but now it seems like a lot of people, players are getting creative, looking nice while doing it. And the deal with Adidas, which happened, I think, 2-3 years ago, marketing-wise, that was a genius move. The NBA Europe Live event, which sort of started in the 80s when Michael Jordan went over to play FC Barcelona. And it's continued today. You have teams like the Raptors, the Golden State Warriors, the Celtics that just recently did, which we'll get to in a moment. And growing the league internationally, bringing the international players, and sort of diversifying the world of basketball, as we've seen in the Olympics in these past few years. As from the 92 when the Dream Team took over to now, a lot of these international teams have our numbers.
Yeah, so...
As a person, though, I don't like them. No shots to anyone in New York, but I know Taj may have mentioned last night that he always put his ear, hand to his ear when everyone's booming.
Oh, yeah.
In the draft.
He loved it.
But, yeah, good businessman, because definitely growing the game, but not a very good person. Because I remember he went on the Jim Rome show, and he got in a beef with Jim Rome over an interview or something like that.
Yeah.
Which we won't go into.
But, you know.
That's a different radio show. But, yeah, NBA, you made your NBA picks on bflow360.com.
I've been working on these for the last several days. 2012-13 NBA predictions, long sought after.
Back to an 82-game season.
Yep, back to a full season, no more of the nonsense last year. And definitely quality of play will be so much better, because you definitely noticed that quality of play last year was really terrible, because you had guys that weren't used to playing, and you'd have a bunch of games. You'd have sometimes they'd be playing three games in a row, and the quality of play, scoring was down, shooting was down, turnovers were up. It's just a mess. But, so it should be a great NBA season. Stern's last full one as commissioner.
It's weird how he's leaving in February. Yeah, that'd be after the All-Star break.
Yeah, he's
it?
Leaving February 2014. And so we'll mark 30 years of being commissioner. And it's a pretty wise term, because it's right in the middle of the agreement, the most recent CBA. So the new commissioner, he doesn't have to come in and have to deal with a labor negotiation rising. He's like comes in right in the middle, so he's used to his job. So, yeah.
All right, so we'll break down the league, get our predictions. This is our NBA segment. Disrespect to college basketball, which we'll touch to, as American University opens up the 2012-13 season next Wednesday on Halloween. But we'll start with the East Conference and the Southeast. Before we have the Atlanta Hawks and the defending champion Miami Heat in this conference, it's pretty much going to be the Miami Heat taking over.
Not even close. Miami Heat are the only team really of worth in the Southeast. I do think Atlanta will make the playoffs. I projected them as the 8th seed.
Even without Joe Johnson?
Yeah, because they still have Joshua Zuno. I think he'll maybe trade
it. That's right. He's been arguing about contract negotiations.
Yeah, and his contract runs out. Al Horford's still one of the best centers in basketball. You know, they do lose Joe Johnson, but now they have more flexibility in the backcourt, and I really like their under-the-radar signing of Lou Williams, play a lot of the shooting guard. And I think he's a solid player. Yeah, they got him for nothing. It was a real steal. So those are the only two teams I think that will make the playoffs out of the Southeast. Washington will be awful. I actually have the other teams, Washington, Charlotte, and Orlando at the bottom three in the conference. I think they'll be miserable. So.
Disrespecting our Wizards.
Yeah, not a lot. New coach is...
Who's our new coach?
Randy Whitman, which I thought was a mistake, because he has a career winning percentage of .338.
Of course, he's Jeff Jones.
Yeah, a lot worse. And he is 120 games under .500.
No kidding.
This is a problem I have with coaching in the NBA. Guys, there's so much retread around. Like, you get a guy like Whitman who's got hired before with an awful record. He's gotten hired again. He's clearly an awful coach. It's not like someone like Dwayne Casey in Toronto who did a solid job, should have gotten fired. Actually got fired for Randy Whitman, which was a disaster. But, yeah, and the team, it's just, there are players I like. I like Nene. The trade, it was an awful trade to get Okafor and Ariza, but they're two solid players.
Ariza's a good defensive player.
Yeah, but they gave up, like, Rashard Lewis's expiring contract for it, who then got bought out. And, like, Rashard Lewis had a big expiring contract, and that's the best they couldn't even get a pick for him. But I think Brad Beal can turn into a guard, but the thing with John Wall, he's already hurt, is you have to wonder now, does he care more about, like, in the offseason, becoming, like, a great player, or just, you know, exciting everybody playing these street games? So, something to watch out for. Charlotte will be atrocious.
They copied the Mavericks. I saw that. When they released their new jerseys, they have the exact same kind of jersey that Dallas has. Surprised nothing has been said about that. Maybe it's because Charlotte's so bad, and Michael Jordan's probably losing more hair than the immortal TED on managing this team.
He doesn't even have any hair.
Exactly. And one interesting fact, though, you think the Magic without Dwight Howard for the first time since Howard got drafted.
Yeah.
What's it going to be like? No Stan Van Gundy either.
Yeah, it's going to be a disaster.
Fresh clean slate. Wizards might even beat them.
They will. I have them worse in the conference. But this is definitely what they want. They need to bottom out, have a terrible season, and hope they get the draft lottery, the top pick. Pretty much nothing back. The best player they got back was Aaron Aflalo, and I like Aaron Aflalo, but he's not going to carry the team. They got Mo Harkless, too, is a guy I like. This team's very little talent. First-time head coach in Jacques Vaughn, NBA veteran. And so it's going to be a long season for Orlando. But then again, that's not a bad thing because they had to finally rid themselves of the Dwight Howard crap.
Yeah, because we had Redick on the show back in May, and he was just sort of stunned and confused by the whole situation that went down. And rightfully so, Dwight Howard did not get a gold medal this summer.
Yeah.
But we'll get to him later in this segment as we move to the Central. The last year's number one seed, the Chicago Bulls, get a healthy D. Rose back. We're trying a pretty solid core that made the playoffs last year.
Yeah.
And looking at this team now, Pacers traded all their players away to my Dallas Mavericks, and Milwaukee Bucks are the first.
They traded all their players. They traded They traded Collison, who's their backup point guard.
And Dante Jones, baby.
Dante Jones, who didn't
they
play.
They still
a
have
lot.
Hands, bro.
Yeah, but.
And they still have Danny Granger.
Yeah. Indiana's clearly the best team in this division as well.
Than the Bulls.
Absolutely. Derrick Rose is not going to play until February, at the earliest.
Hey, John Lucas came alive last year, though.
John Lucas is in Toronto, I believe.
And he got traded.
Yeah, he signed out, in Toronto. Yeah, this team, they got worse around him. They dropped, they lost Korver, they lost a couple other guys, and he brought back.
Taj Gibson's still there.
Taj Gibson's still there. I mean, they're still good players, great coach.
They do have no backup point guard, so
I have them as the seventh team. But they won't
be. Even the Pacers running away.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I think Pacers, they returned the key guys. They returned Granger, Hibbert, David West.
That's right, Hibbert signed a contract.
George Hill. I'm drawing a blank on the shooting guard right now. I don't know why. Paul Boy George.
That's right.
So I think that they're definitely the best team. Boy George. Because
out of Fresno State. That's where we went to college.
Yeah, and because I think Chicago this year was. I rose out for pretty much the whole season. It very well could be the whole season. But, so I think then. And then Detroit, I think, is kind of an intriguing team. I had them low. I think I had them 11th.
Jamal Walters, Detroit Pistons.
Yeah. I think there's some players I like there. And I really like.
Greg Monroe, I like to see.
Greg Monroe, and I want to see how he pairs with Drummond and how he develops. And he's looked very good initially. And I like Lawrence Frank. He's coaching Nats. I think he's a good coach. So I think that the Pistons, they maybe could surprise us here.
What about the experiment of Monte Ellis and Brandon Jennings? Interesting backcourt for the Milwaukee Bucks.
I think that
almost made the 8th seed.
Yeah, I came close. I have him as the 9th seed once again. Because I think the Ellis Jennings combo, I think it could work out.
It could work almost like what Golden State did with Curry.
Yeah, and they're two first guys. But I think it could work out. Scott Stiles is a solid coach. Brought in D'Alembert, who's a journeyman, but he's a solid defender.
Got some mileage on him,
though. They got Epi Udo is a guy I like a lot. Defensively, they drafted John Henson, who's basically Epi Udo. But I think this team that could definitely make a play for a playoff spot, even though I have just out.
Then we go to your conference with your team.
Yeah.
The newly refurbished Brooklyn Nets. Shout out to Jay-Z. An avid listener to the show, I might add.
As he should be.
Although he keeps it under the radar, very quiet. But that should be probably one of the best conferences to watch, as we have the wheels on the bus. We have the yellow dog of the New York Knicks, the team older than Flo and I combined.
Oh, yeah.
The Sixers team that did lose Lou Williams, and a big chunk of the team that made the playoffs last year. But Doug Collins seemed to be proven.
They got Andrew Bynum.
String together a lot of good players.
Yeah.
Get Bynum. And the Boston Celtics without Ray Allen. Who do you see in this conference?
In the
our division.
Eastern or Coastal Division, whatever it's called. I think Boston's still the team to beat.
They look good over in Europe. Despite getting, they did drop one game against Fenerbahce.
Yeah,
and
but,
they did lose some.
Know,
but
I wouldn't put too much stock into that at loss. But I still think they're, you know, the same thing. You know, KG's a million years old. Paul Pierce is getting up there, even though he had a great season last year.
True.
Yeah.
He still got it.
And
losing Ray Allen does hurt them, though.
But this is the years when Rajon Rondo should start hitting his prime. This is where usually the players, they hit their peak. And it's his team now, and I think that...
He had a phenomenal season last year,
absolutely.
Too. Triple-doubles all over the place.
Absolutely. He was awesome.
Much like us today at the tavern.
Yeah. And...
Do you see your Nets doing well?
I think the Nets... They'll be a fun team. I've had them third in division. I have them fourth. I have them behind both Philly and New York. But I think with Brooklyn, a lot of fun to watch offensively. This team's going to be a mess on defense. Even though Coach Avery Johnson is a good defensive coach, this team, I don't see them being a really good defensive team. But they will be fun to watch. And in the playoffs, they'll be one of those teams that's happy to be there. Because they've been so bad, unbelievably bad for several years now. If you look at the Knicks are not a title team. I don't care what Knicks try to sell you. The team's really not that good. I haven't had fourth because I think that, you know, they did finish the season really well. But it's a problem when your three best players on your team can't play on the court together at the same time. And Carmelo, Amari, and Tyus Jones. And now you're seeing that you're going to have Carmelo Anthony play more at the four, which the unit did very well last year, but Carmelo doesn't want to do it because he's just being usual selfish. So I think that Ray Felton's a step down from Lynn because I think that Felton's really not that good. But it's still a good team, a good defensive team, and there's just too much talent for them to really see them being so. And I think the 4-5-6, which I have, is the Knicks, the Sixers. Well, I know you weren't. Just seem like you're too high on him. I'm actually kind of high on him. I think Andrew Bynum can do well. Nick Young and Doug Collins is going to be a disastrous mix. But I still think I was impressed with this team last year, and I think this is a good team. They got 4-5 of 6 of New York, Philly, and Brooklyn. I think they're going to be, like, separated by a couple games. So even though I have them, the Knicks as high as the 4, it's going to be, like, 2 or 3 games. Really different. And none of these teams are title contenders.
So it was an 82-game season. Last year, though, I'd be pretty high on the Nets doing well, especially how old the Knicks and the Celtics are. But with an 82-game season, though, anything's possible. I'm going to say Avery Bradley played very well, having him in the backcourt for Doc Rivers. But the thing I mentioned with Carmelo Anthony, played a little bit of the four during the Olympics.
Yeah.
So it'd be interesting to see if he does sort of shape up. Mike Woodson now is a full-time head coach. He was the interim last year, taking over D'Antoni.
Yeah.
It could be a different Knicks team, though, with him at the helm. But we'll take a quick break. Back radio live from the tavern. Ben Forrest, Michael Gardner. Stay with us here on blogtalkradio.com.
Vamos a disfrutar el sabor de la vida. darling.
Mr. Worldwide.
Oye, tienes todo para ganar y poco para perder.
Tienes todo para ganar y poco para perder. Mira, tantito y
BlogTalkRadio.com, the notorious Ben Forrest, creator of BeFlug360.com, and Michael Gardner joining you live from the tavern for the Halloween episode. And of course, as we said at the top of the show, you can't really dress up on the air. It's pointless. But Flo is a Devils fan, a very dejected Devils fan, as news from the hockey world broke out today that an 82-game season probably will not be happening anytime soon. And I am a reject soccer player that failed to sign a contract.
You mentioned the lockout, and John Buchacross, friend of the show.
Yes.
And
avid listening.
Yep.
One of the hundreds and thousands we got. Shout out to our listeners.
Of course.
Continue to love you, no homo for the guys out there.
Heroes. And yeah, he reported from his sources that it seems that his sources are telling him that they're going to cancel the All-Star Game and the Winter Classic.
No, they can't. We can host it here.
Yeah, they should.
If we could put CeeLo Green and multiple politicians in Bender Arena, we could put an ice rink.
Sure.
Granted, attendance would be very bad.
I don't think we
could fit that many people in there. But anyway, go to facebook.com/fanaticradio. Like the page. Go to Flo's blog at bflow360.com. Follow him on Twitter as well, as we'll get to later in the show. Also, check out the podcast on iTunes, as we are making history the second off-studio. I always say live show. Every show is live. But second time ever we've gone off-campus. Or not off-campus, but out of the studio.
Yeah.
In memory of the Mortal Kombat. He did not die. He just is dollar against sports.
Well, he's dead in terms of sports.
Exactly. Love the kid, though. Avid guest. Love to have him back on the show. Especially with the Cleveland Browns. Apparently, they got a couple of wins.
Yeah. They won a couple weeks ago against Cleveland. Got their first win. And, yeah, they got some new ownership as well. The new owners have been confirmed by the league. So, yeah. So, I guess you could say the future's bright. But
right, looking very brown.
Probably not, because it is still the Browns. And it's still Cleveland.
But we're in the middle of our NBA segment. You can go to the podcast, listen to the interview with David Stern on his thoughts on retiring next year in 2014. And we did the East Coast Conference. We go to the West with an interesting Southwest division. I have my Dallas Mavs, a rebuilding Mavs with no Dirk Nowitzki for the first few weeks, as reported by a good friend, David Aldridge. He also broke it that there will be no center on the All-Star ballot, thus eliminating the Tim Duncan rule, I guess is what many are calling it.
Oh, yeah, because I remember it was in like three or four years ago, he had a great center battle in the All-Star game with Jamal McGlure and Brad Miller. But this really makes sense because now we've seen there's so few centers in the league, and you're seeing guys that really are classified as forwards like Tim Duncan playing center. So it really just makes sense. This is the move that... It made sense because you get the most deserving guys, and quite frankly, there's very few centers deserving besides like Dwight Howard, so you're getting guys that didn't deserve to be in.
Yeah.
So
Yao Ming,
it makes sense.
Remember Yao Ming made the starting lineup and couldn't play because he was injured 2 years ago.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I remember that.
But he had
the influx of votes from China.
As much will Jeremy Lin have, as he makes his season debut with the Rockets. This season. And very interesting. Because you have a team, you have the Mavericks with guys like Chris Kaman and Darren Collison, no Jet, no Jason Kidd, no Eric Dampier, no Ian Amin.
Maybe.
But a Mavericks team with Rick Carlisle, always a team you can look out for. I'm pulling a lot of smoke out of my butt because they are my hometown team. But they have the Rockets, though, with interesting draft class. Royce White,
yeah,
a very hardworking forward. Then you have Jeremy Lamb, a very good, diverse guard coming out of UConn. And Terrence Jones, who I thought went very low in the draft.
Yeah.
He's a workhorse in college, of course, easily undershadowed by Anthony Davis.
When he was awake, showing up for games. But
then you have the Grizzlies, always. Oh, yeah, O.J. Mayo's now at the Mavericks.
Yeah.
And then you have the Spurs, who completely surprised everyone last year by going all the way for losing to the San Antonio Spurs. People, who do you have, according to BFlow360.com's NBA preview, who do you have in this division?
And in this division, I think the class is going to be San Antonio. I have them.
They're very old, though.
They are old, but you know what? They returned everybody from a team that won 60 games last year.
A very good bench, especially with Kawhi Leonard.
Or not 60, 50 games in a 66-game season. So I still think they have room for one more run. And I think Memphis is the second best team.
That's right. They returned Zach Randolph for a full season.
They returned the same guys, but I think they'll take
Mayo. No O.J. Mayo, though.
Take a step back because with Mayo, even though he was very inconsistent, he played a big role as a shooter, spacing out for Gasol and Zach Randolph. So that was.
But crowd noise.
I think after that, just sneaking into the playoffs is the Dallas Mavericks. I really think they're going to take a step back. Dirk Nowitzki, his injury problems. And last year he had the lowest scoring average since the second year in the NBA. So 21.8 points, I believe.
Yeah.
And I think he may start taking a step back. And I really don't love the team. And you saw the team last year that they were the seventh seed. So I don't think they're better. So
it was a shortened season.
Yeah.
And we were still in championship hangover.
Yeah, that's true.
Which I'm pretty sure we still are.
Yeah. But that's not a bad thing because he did win a title a couple years ago. But I don't think the team, I don't have high hopes for him. But I think they're still a playoff team. Actually, the next team I like, and I don't know if you mentioned them, the New Orleans Hornets.
Really? Yes, they have a very good draft class. Austin Rivers, Anthony Davis.
I think Anthony Davis right away, I think he's definitely going to win.
Him playing with the Olympic
year.
Team was probably the best thing he could have done.
They're talking about on Grantland, the Over-Under podcast, which is great.
Oh, the Blood Bill Simmons.
And what a friend Joe has. But I think him playing there was definitely huge for him. I think looking at this team, you got Austin Rivers, who probably won't play right away at point guard. You got Eric Gordon, brought him back. Need him to be healthy. You got Davis down low. So, and I think this team, I had him around 10. And I think this is a team that, good team, and I really like head coach Imani Williams. Houston, I think, is the worst team. I don't think. The best guy in their team is Kevin Martin, who'll get traded at some point. But I think this is by design.
Because they have no Luis Scola.
They brought in all those picks to try and make a move for Dwight Howard, and it didn't happen. So now they gave a lot of money for Lynn, who I think will be good in Amorisi at center. And I think that this is a team kind of almost like a rebuilding year. It's a very young team. I think they're still wheeling and dealing as Daryl Morey does every year. So I think I believe I had them 13th or 12th in the conference. So not a great season for the Rockets.
All right, and then for the Northwest, surprising. Obviously, this is the division with the Oklahoma City Thunder,
yep.
The defending conference champions. And a lot of teams that could pretty much be a wild card in the Western Conference, especially come playoff time when the 8 teams are seeded. You have the Nuggets, Timberwolves, Blazers, and the Jazz. Now, I'm making lobbies for some of the teams. Timberwolves, Kevin Love, like you said, you mentioned loud before we went to commercial break, that certain players have their peak years, as we expect Rajon Rondo to have this year. Kevin Love is one of those guys as well.
Yeah.
He's coming off one of the team.
He is out for 6 weeks.
That's right. Injury bug.
And Ricky Rubio won't come back till next year.
As in next season or 2013?
As the new year, I should have said.
When those two come back, hopefully the Timberwolves can hold it down.
Yeah.
If not, they'll be themselves so far in a hole. It could be a good year for Kevin Love. Arguably one of the top 10 best players in the league.
I agree.
In terms of having a guy that can shoot the outside and get rebounds. I think he was averaging 20 and 15 last year.
Mm-hmm.
Very good numbers, but you're very high on the Nuggets. I saw your tweets today.
Oh, I'm big on the Nuggets. I've been big on the Nuggets for a while because I like how they rebuilt themselves as they're a deep team.
Very deep last year, even with Duke Ball, JaVale McGee.
Yeah, and he's still there. But I love the acquisition of Andre Iguodala. Yes, he gives them another guy in the wing, but he's a hell of a defensive player. The best guy in Philly last year. And he's coming off a great year where while he wasn't scoring a whole lot, his defense was incredible. I think that'll be far. I have them fourth in the conference. I'm really high. I know a bunch of people really high in this Nuggets team. George Karl, a very good coach. So I think this team's going to be very good.
Very diverse team. Team that I think should beat the Lakers. But, of course, the Angel of Stern, who will no longer be with us in a few years, sort of pulled some strings to make a Game 7 happen. And by that time, the Nuggets were so tired. They're very good. Surprised a lot of people last year.
Yeah.
Corey Brewer off the bench. Of course, no Aaron Aflalo.
Like I said, a very deep team.
And, of course, Ty Lawson, Gallinari.
Yep.
Consistently
Wilson
good.
Chandler coming back from
yes,
injury?
Yes, that's right. Cause he was in China.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Him and J.R. Smith were exiled. Him and Kenny Martin, they were all in China. And couldn't get the full clearance to come back.
Yep.
Now they are. But you see the Thunder winning this division again.
Yeah, I think they're not only going to win the division, I think they're going to be the top seed. The team that put it all together last year, they returned everybody, and I don't see any reason why they won't be.
I'm going to quote you on this one. Scott Brooks is a damn good coach.
I don't know if he's a great coach.
He does a good job of getting a group of very talented guys. He's made it work.
Yeah, that is true. But I don't think he's a great guy. I think he's a fine coach. I think they'll be the top seed. And so, the team really look out for. Yeah, but we brought him Minnesota. If Kevin Love wasn't out for six weeks, I think I'd put him in the playoffs, but now I have him as the 19th. I think that loss, and then without Rubio. When they lost Rubio, this team stunk like a stone.
They were very good until he went down. It was all Kobe Bryant's fault, too.
Rick Adelman's a very good coach, but I just think with this team, it's going to be wait till next year. Unfortunate, because I think they're a lot of fun to watch, and they're really likable.
That is true. One of the dark questions, am I purchasing Kevin Love and or Rubio jersey?
There you go.
Possible Christmas gifts. Along with some Crystal Dalton clearance merchandise from the SportsZone website. But I think the Thunder, I agree with you as well. Thunder, probably, what's the good thing? I put more than 50 wins this year because.
50 wins? I think they're going to get 60.
What's the Bulls record? So 72.
Yeah.
Way too high. Yeah, 60 wins. Because the Mavericks, the year they won the championship, at around 60 wins as well. So, arguably, Kevin Durant is. Top three, the best players.
I think he's the second best player.
Second best
people,
player in the league.
Well, let me just say that. I know there are a couple of people that they're like, oh, he's the best player in the league. I'm like, no, he's not the best player in the league.
LeBron
not
James.
Better than LeBron. Because Kevin Durant's an okay defender. That's the thing. LeBron's an elite defender. Who?
On the train.
Exactly.
He's a monster. But Kevin Durant, the best catch and shoot, as you mentioned, from the Olympics. Well, I think he shot 78% in catch-and-shoot situations, courtesy of the gold medal. Also, Westbrook playing great defense. And if they sign James Harden, another acquisition from that big three that were on the Olympic team. Basically, anyone who played at the Olympics, Coach K this year, is going to have a very good season. Even Anthony Davis didn't even get in. And so then we go to the Pacific Division, the final division of our NBA 2012-13 coverage. And this is where we have the glitz and glamour of the Los Angeles Lakers. With Steve Nash, Dwight Howard, the Black Mamba, a.k.a. Kobe Bryant, Pau Gasol, Metta World Peace. On paper, or I guess for player personnel, this is one of the best assembled teams. But you don't think they'll be as good as people say they will?
I think I have them as the second team. I just want to give a quick mention to the Portland Trail Blazers. We didn't mention them.
Marcus Aldridge.
They're not going to do anything. And Utah Jazz, I have them in the playoffs as a 7th.
Yeah, Gordon Hayward.
They're pretty deep team. Good front court guys. I like Ty Corbin. But yeah, I think the Lakers, it's going to take some while getting used to. It's not going to, I don't think it's going to be
0-7 in preseason. Even though it doesn't matter, though, but it's a little hyper concern.
With the Heat, because the Heat, you know, as LeBron and Wade, they play kind of similar. This guy, I think it's still going to take a little while. There's always an X factor of if Kobe's going to be petulant or a team player or not. But I think they're...
Yeah, because he told Kurt Rambis that this is still his team. So some egos could be clashing.
He's been saying some weird stuff of late, but they're the team to beat in that division, definitely. And they're a legitimate title contender. No question about it.
All right, and currently on our live air broadcast here from the Tavern. We'll be running out, but once again, you can catch the podcast on iTunes. Go to iTunes. Search Fanatic Radio on the podcast. Look for the radio tower of different colors. Listen to Notorious Ben Florence, Myles Gardner. I had David on the show. I'll bring Tyler Tomei on the show later in this episode as he breaks down the Notre Dame game. But we're currently continuing our NBA coverage. The Clippers could easily be just as good as any other team in the playoffs, can't they?
I disagree.
In what way?
I think that this team, looking at it, I think they're limited because I think with guys like Griffin, they don't want to win. I think Chris Paul wants to win, but I think Blake Griffin really just wants to, like, you know, amaze.
Yeah.
And
Vito
Negro's an awful coach. He's an atrocious coach. And they have a bunch of guys on their bench that could get a lot of minutes elsewhere. So I think Vinny Del Negro's not the kind of guy you want to juggle minutes, juggle emotions, because it could be a mess. And I really think, at them as the 60s, I really think they're a little overrated. Because, they did get to the second round last year.
But also, with a shortened season, they are probably one of the youngest teams.
I'm not buying the Clippers as, like, a Western Conference contender.
All right, so who are the top, as you finished our NBA team breakdowns, who are the top three in each conference for you?
For me, and I said this is also the kind of consensus, for me in the East, Miami, Boston, Indiana. And in the West, it's Oklahoma City, Los Angeles, San Antonio.
So who do you have in the finals?
Finals, I actually have the Spurs. I know so many people are going Lakers Heat because they're, you know, literally everybody on our panel of our NBA segment.
Which you will not name.
Yeah, it's pretty terrible. I host it because I want
that.
It to be a train wreck. But, yeah, everyone
like a
had either,
train arena,
everyone had either Heat, the Lakers, or Heat Thunder. And so I really think the Spurs, who people don't know, they had a great year last year and they returned everybody. And I really think that the Spurs are going to beat the Lakers in round two. They're going to just edge the Thunder, the West Conference Finals. And then I think they'll lose in five to Miami. So there's my finals prediction. Miami over San Antonio in five.
Miami over San Antonio. I could see the Boston Celtics making a substantial run.
I could see it.
Because they did pretty well against the Heat last year. And I think the only thing separating them, well, obviously, was the shortened season. So the amount of training, I think if the Celtics can stay healthy with sort of the youth that Doc Rivers brings in, they could give the Heat a run for their money. I am sort of on the Knicks bandwagon. I think if Woodson can figure out this whole Carmelo Anthony deal and they can establish a pretty good point guard, even Jason Kidd, as goofy as he is, he sort of...
I really think he's
good. He sort of helped the Mavericks. He's helped the Mavericks turn around because he is an assist man, and that's what Carmelo wants, someone to give him the ball, much as Mari Stoudemire. They could be a big threat. The Miami Heat, now that D-Wade Wade has repaired his knee, is stronger than ever. They get Ray Allen. They get all these outside shooters. Norris Cole did a phenomenal job last year as a rookie. So, not a big Chris Bosh fan, though.
Not a lot of people are.
He's a mess. Apparently, Silas thinks he looks like a dinosaur. And apparently, he thinks Steve Nash does as well.
I didn't get
that. Steve Nash is amazing.
Yeah. Silas is...
But your San Antonio Spurs, though, it's interesting because Greg Popovich did a great job of cycling out his bench to keep his players healthy.
Uh-huh.
It's interesting, though, to see how a longer season could help. But I like your San Antonio Spurs. But I think the Thunder have too much athleticism on the team. And,
that's legit.
But I think because the Thunder can easily beat the Lakers. I think Pau Gasol is getting tired of this. He won't get the ball as much. Now you have Dwight Howard. And Kobe Bryant is still as selfish as always as it could go. As Charlie Hunter,
yeah.
Remember the AU men's soccer team walked by, gave us a shout out. But yeah, definitely.
Wait, what?
I can't even make a prediction on that. I think it's Heat and Thunder. I'm going with Kyle Sell. Something I never thought I would do. But that concludes our NBA segment. Let's now go to our college football segment. And this is a prestigious interview that Flo and I had the pleasure of doing last night.
But of course.
With no alcohol involved.
Naturally.
Only off the air.
Oh.
But Tyler Tamayo, an avid Notre Dame insider, an editor of The Eagle, an editor of AmWord.
Yes.
And one of the hosts of us on Sports Zone sat down with us to dissect a very, pretty much crucial match in college football. Let's go see which one of these two teams, Oklahoma or Notre Dame, could get a BCS bid. Here's his thoughts on that. Was that Saturday night on NBC?
Yes.
All right, here's Mr. Tamayo joining us for our weekly conversation.
You think Brian Kelly, you think he's going to actually Newt Rockne in that sub, Ben?
Well, I wouldn't go that far quite yet. I think the first...
Yes or no?
No.
Okay.
Wait, who's Newt Rockne?
He was the, the most famous fighting Irish coach. He helped popularize the forward pass. Coached him way back in the 20s, died in a plane crash. But, yeah, he's like, when you talk about the great Notre Dame coaches, he's the guy.
Is Brian Kelly on that level?
Not yet. I still think he has a way to go. His first 2 years, good years, not spectacular years. Solid but not great years. But the thing about Brian Kelly is that in the third year at his program, he always turns it around. We saw it at Cincinnati, especially. Now here at Notre Dame, they're undefeated going into the Oklahoma game. So I think that I wouldn't put him at that level yet. I mean, we've seen it before almost with Charlie Weiss, where, he had two great years, and then they extended him for a 10-year contract, which they're still buying out. So I think you can get into trouble if you, you know, call someone a savior too early. At the same time, it's an exciting time to be a Notre Dame fan.
Well, he's, yeah, because Kelly led the Cincinnati to the Orange Bowl, right? They won it too, right?
Led him to the Orange Bowl. I'm not sure if they won.
He led him to the Sugar Bowl, but he had left for Notre Dame.
Oh, that's right.
Now is when they got destroyed by
Florida. Florida.
And they were being coached by the offensive coordinator who was leaving for Buffalo.
That's right. Yep, he had a good call.
I actually picked Cincinnati in the game. They lost by like 40.
Well, that's Tim Tebow's last game.
Yeah,
that's right.
Tom Brennan and Brian Billick on the call for Fox.
That's Fox.
Brian Billick.
Classic Fox.
No kidding. So you surprised Notre Dame 7-0?
To be honest, yeah. I definitely am, especially with the way their schedule's set up. Playing Michigan and Michigan State back-to-back, as they do all the time, it's just tough to get two wins out of facing those two teams from the Big Ten. Now, the Big Ten's a little bit down this year, still, you know, always to beat those two teams is nice. And then the Stanford game, which they kind of, you know, pulled out. They got a late field goal to tie it, and then they won it in overtime. But the way their schedule's set up, you know, with Michigan State, Michigan, Stanford, Miami, Purdue, you would think somewhere in there they'd suffer a loss, but still somehow they're undefeated.
What do you think the main reason behind that is?
100% the defense. The offense,
Marquise Golston or what's his name?
Manti Te'o.
No, the quarterback.
Everett Golston. Well, Everett Golston's been a little bit shaky sometimes.
Who's Marquise Golston?
Marcus Golston.
Yes. Wide receiver, wasn't he?
Yeah, wide receiver for the Saints. But do you think that maybe there's a quarterback controversy? You know, you see Tommy Rees come in a few times in relief. So do you think that, you know, possible quarterback controversy is out there?
You know, I think so. I think the way it's been playing out where Tommy Rees has actually saved them in a couple of games, most notably the Michigan game when Everett Golston got off to a really bad start and was pulled early. Tommy Rees came in, you know, played a very solid game and won that Michigan game for him. It even started at the beginning of the season, the Purdue game. Tommy Rees relieved Everett Golston and picked up the win. And then you saw this past week against BYU. Everett Golston was out. He did not play this game, so Tommy Rees had the full game. And there was some talk that this was kind of a prep game for Tommy Rees to start the Oklahoma game. Now, Everett Golston's named the starter, but Tommy Rees got a full game of reps in against BYU, so I don't think if Everett Golston struggles, I think Kelly will not hesitate to give Everett Golston the hook and insert Tommy Rees.
But you mentioned Manti Te'o, right?
Manti Te'o.
I'm being the Notre Dame aficionado you are, is he Heisman worthy with the way he's been playing this year?
I think you make the argument, but I just don't think he'll win the Heisman Trophy. The last time a defensive player won the Heisman Trophy was Charles Woodson with Michigan, I think, in 1997.
Yep.
Yeah.
Beat Manning.
Yeah, yeah. When that was when Peyton Manning really struggled against Florida.
Yes.
And Tennessee dropped a game to Florida early in the year. But the thing about Charles Woodson was that he played defensive back and receiver and returned punts. So that's three phases of the game, special teams, defense, offense, where he's in. Manti Te'o, just a defender and a linebacker, too. And linebacker, you know, you rack up the tackle stats, but you don't rack up the sack stats.
Yeah.
And he does have interceptions, but at the same time, he's not a defensive back. But he's in the backbone of the Notre Dame
team. And you know what's interesting with Manti Te'o? I remember a few years ago when Notre Dame, out of the blue, was playing in Hawaii. They played in the Hawaii Bowl against. That was when Jimmy Clausen was still the quarterback. And I was like, why are they doing it? It turned out that, oh, they're looking at this prospect, this little linebacker guy, Te'o, and how he's really developed into a one heck of a football player.
Well, yeah, he definitely has, and they were involved in a very tight recruiting battle with USC for him. And this is a Charlie Weiss recruit. So, you know, Charlie Weiss is recruiting, still paying dividends for the Irish, but a very tight recruiting battle with USC at a time when USC was winning all the recruits. So it's kind of a surprise that Manti Te'o chose to pick Notre Dame, and it's really helpful to anchoring a defense that has struggled in the past. In the past, during the Charlie Weiss years, that was their weakness, and now it's one of the top defensive units in the country.
But now their game's Saturday. They probably face their toughest opponent of the season in an Oklahoma team that's coming off with a 63-20 victory in the Red River Shootout. Are you nervous about the Oklahoma defense, about the big, physical, fast defensive team that pretty much shut down a Texas Longhorn offense?
Well, the odds makers actually are giving Notre Dame no respect, as Notre Dame ranked fifth in the country, but going into Norman as 10-point underdogs.
Ooh, really?
Wow.
Very surprising that Notre Dame, you know, even though they're ranked higher, going in as double-digit underdogs on the road for this primetime game. But more so what I'm worried about is the offense. I think Notre Dame has not seen an attack like this all year. Landry Jones spreading the ball around. Probably he's going to be the best quarterback they face. Denard Robinson is a great runner, but not a great thrower. And you saw that with Notre Dame picking him off a lot of times in that game in South Bend. So what I'm really nervous about is that Oklahoma offense against a Notre Dame pass defense that's very young in the secondary. They can get to the quarterback with they have a good pass rush, but the Notre Dame defense secondary very young. Landry Jones could exploit that, so I think that's what I'm a little bit worried about.
Could this turn into the game that we saw earlier this year when Oklahoma lost to Kansas State, where Oklahoma had solid defense, good offense, but a quarterback that almost choked at times, had a couple turnovers? You feel like Notre Dame's defense, as we mentioned with Teo, could put enough pressure on Jones to force him to make mistakes?
You know, I think it's going to be really tough. And I think that if you look at it from the Notre Dame side, it's going to be tough to say you have confidence in Everett Golson and Tommy Reese and their attack matching Landry Jones score for score. And another thing, Kyle Brinson, who's been the Notre Dame kicker, had a very rough game against BYU. Missed a couple of very makeable field goals, and that kept BYU in the game.
Friend of the show, I would say.
Friend of the show?
That's true.
Oh, that's great.
That's true.
Great that you are friends with Kyle Brinza. But yeah, he did miss a couple field goals that, you know, could have put the game away for Notre Dame. It ended up not. So I think that's one thing to look, keep an eye on, him kicking, going on the road. But as you said, it'll be a test for Notre Dame to match the Oklahoma offensive production. I think it could be a lot of run, Sierra Woods, Theo Riddick, a lot of running for Notre Dame. Mm. But it depends on Coach Kelly's game plan.
Because he coached Cincinnati and they went down to Oklahoma. Hung with them, I think it was 2 years ago.
Yes.
Or 3 years ago, yeah.
3 years ago, yeah.
Cody coached Cincinnati, hung with them up till about the fourth quarter. Then, of course, Oklahoma just overpowered them. But when I lose this game, do you think that Notre Dame will still have enough firepower and confidence to dethrone USC this year?
I don't think so. I think the USC game, which... The thing is, when we go out to USC, it is the Saturday after Thanksgiving. Now, the thing is, we've always tried to schedule USC coming here late in that time, but they never want to face the cold weather in South Bend. So they're always coming in middle October. When we head out to there, to USC, for Thanksgiving, it's a big game for USC. You see, you know, all their old players on the sidelines, a lot of celebrities on the sidelines down in L.A. And
like Chris Eldo.
Exactly.
CD
might make an appearance this year
at the
USC game. And Notre Dame has had a lot of trouble at USC, and I think it could turn into a Heisman showcase type game for Matt Barkley, because it's going to be on national TV, probably going to be the ABC primetime game. We saw Carson Palmer in his Heisman year kind of showcase it against Notre Dame. I think it could be a bad situation for Notre Dame going at those fast receivers in Woods and Lee, and I think USC is going to have a huge advantage when we get there down the road.
So even with two losses, do you think with the strength of schedule Notre Dame has, could they make an at-large of a BCS bowl?
With two losses, yeah, I think they'll make the BCS bowl. They'll put them at 10-2. The Oklahoma and USC games are obviously the marquee games that they're going to be playing, and I think a lot of people would mark them down as losses. Then you got, you know, Pitt, Wake Forest, Boston College, teams like that, that Notre Dame can't afford to slip up against. Now, they've done that in the past. A lot of times, past years, they've lost games they shouldn't have lost, dropped games where they were favored at home they shouldn't have lost. So you have, like I said, those three games where they should be able to win. And like I said, if they get to 10-2, yep, they'll be in the BCS.
There you go. Looking like, because I know I've done my predictions, and I know a lot of folks definitely think if they've got two losses, they'll be in, because they're a big draw, you know. It looked like the Fiesta Bowl because they had the first at large bid. And I know you would definitely travel down to like Glendale and see your fighting Irish.
Well, now the test is how are they going to show up in these BCS games? Because the past two, they have been absolutely blown out.
Yeah.
The Ohio State game.
Well, neither of those teams were really that good, and you'll admit that.
Well, I think that the.
They were both trash.
I think that the first year.
No, they were both trash.
Sugar Bowl team was good.
I think the Sugar Bowl team. I think the Fiesta Bowl team was a little bit better than the Sugar Bowl team.
Yeah, no, I'm just tugging your chains.
But it'll be interesting to see how they match up, because, like I said, that LSU game is a blowout. Oh, I think it's a blowout. And this is kind of, you know, a huge marquee matchup game. Some people, you know, don't like the Notre Dame hype. They feel like they get too much credit sometimes. So that'll be a chance for Notre Dame to make a statement come, you know, somewhere around New Year's Day.
But it's interesting you say that, but Notre Dame really didn't make a big move into the poll. It's kind of been a slow and steady kind of thing, even though when they've gotten these big wins and they were undefeated, it took them a while to crack the top 10. So I think maybe the voters were like, all right, we don't want to overestimate these teams, because you look at a lot of their big wins thus far, and you're looking at teams like Michigan, Michigan State, who aren't looking so great. So I think that this year they've been, I wouldn't say under the radar, but maybe not over the radar, where they were just immediately thrust into the top 10, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but I also think that those Michigan-Michigan State games, it's just tough for any team to win those two games back-to-back.
I agree.
And I think that's oftentimes you'll see them at 2-1 to start the season, just because it's so tough to win those two games. And the Michigan State game was a night game at a tough place
to
play in East Lansing.
True.
They beat them. And then just 2 weeks after that, after playing at Soldier Field against Miami, they get Stanford at home, another tough team.
That's true. So, I forgot to mention Stanford.
And each time they won. But this weekend in Oklahoma, it's sad to say, but I think that they will suffer their first loss of the year.
Good man.
Got to be honest when I come on.
Thanks.
As he is always honest, Taj Mehta joins us on Fanatic Radio. I'm agreeing with him, I'm guessing, as Oklahoma probably too much at home for Notre Dame.
Yeah, I've got Notre Dame losing this Sunday. I think Notre Dame.
By how much, though?
I think it'll be a close game. I think it'll be a touchdown game. But I thought that was very surprised at that 10-point spread. I think they're the favorite, or not the favorite, one of my favorites. But I think Notre Dame's going to lose for the first time. And I think that it'll be a good game, but I think Notre Dame, their dreams of a perfect season will come to a close.
A little over the top, I think, for a perfect season. Even if they do beat Oklahoma, they do have to play USC. As Tyler mentioned, Matt Barkley's Central Senior Day coming out
the
already.
Next week.
Exactly so. And the season will be pretty much over for that. But, of course, Tyler also mentioned the small games that Notre Dame will play. The Pitts, the Boston Colleges, who always are gunning for an upset, especially late October when teams love to get that final one punch knockout to upset the high teams in the BCS rankings. I'm thinking it's gonna be a blowout though, because this is an Oklahoma team that hung 63 on Texas. A very good Texas team. Of course, did not face a lot of good competition, but it got into a lot of shootouts with other teams. Thinking of the Red River Shootout will be an offensive battle. Oklahoma's defense stood tall. And when Tyler mentioned that quarterback controversy, as you mentioned as well, that they were sort of trying to find their identity. They faced a Miami defense that wasn't really that good. A Stanford defense that was okay. They were playing at home against USC, though. But, of course, if both of us get this wrong and Notre Dame does win,
everybody at school thinks I'm a freaking idiot because of you.
That will be us.
Yeah, well, you don't want that to be us. That would be unfortunate.
But, yeah, that's our college football, because Florida plays Georgia this weekend as well, world's largest outdoor cocktail party. Does Florida stay undefeated?
I say yes. I think Florida, their offense has been solid, but their defense has been incredible.
It's champ.
They always play the game at the neutral game site in Jacksonville. If this is a game in Georgia, I'd pick Georgia, but it's a neutral site. I like Florida in this game.
All right, before we get to tweets from Flo, just a shout out to Marco Bell, or not Douglas Bell. But apparently free tacos on October 30th from 2 to 6, I guess Eastern time.
There you go.
That's sort of the gray area, though. No one knows exactly what time it is.
Yeah, I would assume Eastern.
But because of the World Series, you steal a base, hashtag steal a taco, you end up getting a free Doritos Logos tacos. I will be getting mine. Flo, will you be getting yours on Tuesday?
I hope so. I don't know where the nearest Taco Bell is.
I know there's one on the campus of George Mason.
Oh, that'll be interesting.
That is a
stretch. I don't want to pay the $2 in Metro fare just to...
It is free, though.
That is true.
The best things in life are
very
free,
true.
Much like the Wondrous Tavern that has not kicked us out yet.
Yeah.
But that's where we'll
be closed in about 40 minutes.
That's where Beeflo and I are today. Next week, though, we'll try an experiment, as I will be on the road at Texas Motor Speedway for the AAA Texas 500 weekend. We'll try to pull off the inevitable of doing an off-site, off-state, off-region, because I guess D.C. isn't really a state, to host this show next week. 4 to 5 p.m. on blogtalkradio.com. Speaking of NASCAR, huge weekend in Martinsville. Jimmy Johnson goes on the record saying it's pressure time, as the five-time champ has yet to win in the chase this year.
Yep.
And first thing he comes out and wins the pole. This is go time for Jimmy Johnson at a track where he has done very well, isn't it?
Absolutely. Definitely one of his best shows. I mean, Jimmy Johnson pretty much successful in every track, but Martinsville is definitely out there one of his strongest tracks. And he needs a strong runner if he wants to get that seventh title. It's because Brad Keselowski, yeah, I pulled up. Vickers is starting second. Keselowski's had a very strong chase as well. He's leading by a double-digit points. So
seven.
Jimmy Johnson really So Jimmy Johnson really needs to have a strong run this week, and I think he's the favorite to win. He's just so good at Martinsville.
We have Denny Hamlin though.
And
this
is
sort of in his backyard. He's done well
as
well.
Very true. Should be a heck of a race then.
I think this is a must-win for Jimmy Johnson. Because if, by some chance, he does play the consistency card and it comes down to a tight race at Homestead, Brad Keselowski has that upper hand because of the two wins he has in the chase. It should be interesting, though. But a quick shout-out to Regan Smith, filling the role for Dale Earnhardt Jr. His good work finished, I believe, 8th or 9th at Kansas last
week. I think
it
was 6th.
Yeah, exactly.
A very strong
Earned
role.
A ride in the Nationwide Series. It'll be interesting to see how he does with good equipment.
Yep.
As Dale Jr. returns, glad to see him back. Said he wants to end on a high note, which I hope he does. Wouldn't it be great if he got a win?
Yeah, I agree.
And hopefully Jeff Gordon does as well. This is the track he does well at. But it's funny, Matt Kenseth has two wins, and he's still in, what, 10th? In the points, 59 points behind.
He won at Talladega. He won Charlotte.
Kansas,
pardon me. And, yeah, because he really got off to a poor start. And there was so much controversy. Oh, would they, you know, last year would it be a lame duck, and everyone, Robbie Reiser, GM at RFR, said, oh, yeah, definitely not true. But, you know, now I think he's looking forward to joining Joe Gibbs Racing, which would be an interesting pairing. It would be weird seeing him not in a Ford.
That's true, because he's been in a Ford his entire career.
Yep.
All right, and one more thing before we get to tweets from Flo and our shout-outs. We hyped a lot last week about this Phil Reeves game, who apparently is not a real person.
Yeah.
As you will read in the Eagle, the story will be leaked, which I'm very upset working with the athletics department. I hate that someone actually like takes it seriously. And it's like, oh, Phil Reeves isn't a real person. But our men's soccer team, and before you were at the game.
Yep.
So the game, I don't act like you weren't there. We saw you. Couch man on the call with me. Mm-hmm. The American came from behind and won a miraculous 3-2 game in double overtime. Here are quotes from the games from Coach Todd West, goal scorer and player of the game, Al St. Kane, and Billy Knutson, the Patriot League goalkeeper of the week.
Siegfried, right foot across, Kane, it's in! American has done it! The Eagles have won in double overtime. And
I actually think relieved. Relieved is probably the word I would use. Coming from one goal down and then 2-1 down, and you just say, can we just get a chance? So the second goal gave us a chance, obviously. And then, you know, it's an exciting win. So I'm thrilled for the guys. We've had 5 games in 15 days, and we're tired, and we're playing against a very good team, and keeps us on top. So it's relieved, but it's also, you know, it's exciting for everyone. It's been a while, and you know, we actually took him out of the lineup, trying to let his brain calm down a little bit because he was pressing. But Chris Hazard this morning at the alumni game said, Todd, I've got a gut feeling that Alisson's going to come out today. And I guess Chris was right. When he ties it up and hits the game winner, I guess he did have his coming out party. But the ball Seth laid off to Colin Siegfried probably won't show up in the stat sheet. Maybe it should. And then the service Colin Siegfried and then the run to the near post. It's a great goal to win it. So you'll take any goal to win it, but I think it's a great goal that won it.
It was a tough game. We gotta give our hats off to Navy. You know, they came out tough. Good team. You know, they kept the ball well, defended hard, you know. But to get a win, this is huge, you know. Because now we're at the top of the table of the Patriot League, so all we have to do is win a couple more games and we'll be hosting. It's huge. It's huge because since I've actually been here, we haven't beaten Navy in the regular season, so to do it for the first time, I see him here is great. Dude, it's huge, man. You know, as a striker, you always want to score, so like when you go through drafts, you kind of like have to keep yourself motivated and positive, you know, so hopefully when that chance comes, you'll be there to take it. So just got to keep myself, you know, engaged and focused.
In some ways, I thought it was against the run of play. I thought we came out and were kind of in their end. the guys have been resilient. We played four overtime games in our last in all our five conference games. Four have been overtime, and we're undefeated in those games. So I think it shows some character and some resiliency that these guys are going
to
fight.
It's a great win. We really needed that one to be on top of the table. We like not to. We like to win at home, so it's always good to keep that streak alive. I think we're 6-1 now, so it's good to get that one. I mean, I just got to do what I can to keep the team in it. Can't really score too many goals, so I got to do my part. And the defense helped out a lot today, so it's good. Well, everyone on this team really believes we can always win, and we're all great friends, so we love to battle back. We've done it a couple times this year, and it's a great example of that. A lot of heart in this team. Huge momentum boost. I think we've got a couple games left, two in Patriot League, and if we can win out, I think we'll definitely be hosting. So it's very big for us.
So back here from the radio, live from the tavern. Do you think this experience has gone well?
Absolutely. I think it's gotten to be a little better. I was skeptical initially. But, yeah, it's gone relatively well. It's not a huge day because Friday afternoon is kind of dead.
Kind of why we're here. Keeping it locked on the tavern.
Oh, you are living la vida loca.
We are today.
As always.
Michael Garner, I will be on the road next week at Texas Motor Speedway, as we have mentioned before. So we'll try to get back to you at blogtalkradio.com. But any shout-outs before we go to Tweets and Flow?
I just got to give a shout-out to the great workers in Tavern. Actually, all of the AU Bon Appetit workers, they're all great folks. They work very hard, and kudos to them all. So, yeah, that's what I want to give a shout-out to.
I'll give a shout-out to Will Chang, a name that probably most of you do not know. History lesson. He is the owner of the San Francisco Giants and DC United. Very successful businessman who is probably on cloud nine now. The Vito Loca, he's definitely him. Because he has both his teams in the playoffs once again. And obviously winning the World Series in 2010. He says, quote, his dream come true is to bring home an MLS Cup and a World Series trophy. It's a wonderful experience to have one of your teams, but to have two is very indeed special. Because it's a DC United team that suffered Dwayne De Rosario out for the season, reigning MVP. So to have the team beat Columbus at RFK to secure the second seed, DC United, local team, is in the MLS playoffs. Which rumors are Frank Lampard might be coming to the MLS.
Yeah, you know. Hey, I got nothing wrong with getting, you know, out of shape, out of their prime, you know.
Of course, we have some good talent, though, is the USA team made it to the Hex, which is the final six teams qualifying for two spots in the World Cup, beating Guatemala. But also, go to the Fanatic Radio Facebook page, because there is a link there from BarstoolSports.com, a very credible source of interesting information, especially in the sporting world, as a video of Colin Siegfried's stone-cold stunner celebration is on the site. 18,000 YouTube views.
Really?
I know. So,
wow.
Basically, I just sent him the link just to say, you know, here's your celebration. So, if you want to share it with your friends or anything.
Oh, yeah, no, I did notice because I watched the video because he had the great cameraman act.
Yes, Malcolm Barber. 18 grand views. That's the most viral video I've ever had on my YouTube channel. But I shout out to him because now he has a contest of what is going to be his next celebration. Any advice for him? What should his next celebration be? As they play Lehigh this Saturday.
That is a great question. You know, I'm not a big celebration guy, so I think you may have something better with your death than I will.
Someone suggested on his Twitter page, at Colin Siegfried, to throw the corner flag like a javelin. But I don't think maintenance would be too high with that. I have two. One of them is Terry Henry sort of the karate kick with the corner flag once when he played with Arsenal. And when I tweeted him with a picture, it was doing the stanky leg like Charlie Davies did when he was with the national team.
And we got the funk.
Oh, well, glory be, the funk's on me, Bobby.
Keep that funk alive. Keep that funk alive.
Well, it's 1975, and we'll just be keeping the funk alive.
It's not 1979, but the funk is still alive. It is time for our critically acclaimed segment, Tweets from Flo. We need to win a web award for that, don't we?
Sure.
But anyway, an interesting quote. We were talking to this even before the show started. This upcoming Sandy Storm could be wild 6 hours ago. Are you excited for that? I mean, obviously, not excited for it,
sure.
But...
I mean, as long as we don't lose power, I mean, I got no problem. May lose power, but...
What were some of the statistics you were saying that the weather's going to be like next week?
Yeah, it was... I think it was going to be Tuesday. It's going to be a high of, like, 44. 80% chance of rain. It's going to rain from Sunday for the next few days on. Very high winds. I think it was 44, 45, with a chance of hitting 50. Wind gusts. So, it's going to be some wild weather. And... Yeah, because it's weird. It's like it's a hurricane and it's moved close, and now there's a winter storm coming, so it's kind of like a nor'easter hurricane.
That's weird.
Very odd.
Tropical storms are big. We got a hurricane last Hurricane Ike, I believe, last year. Because I remember it was during after Labor Day, because the U.S. Open was going on, the tennis tournament, and they had to cancel a couple of games. Everyone got all upset about that. But yeah, so you both of us are excited for hurricanes, just hopefully no power. You did tweet it would be hilarious if the Jets actually are serious about trading Tim Tebow. Is this true?
Yeah, there are rumors that they may trade Tim Tebow. He's barely played. I think it'd be a mistake because you wouldn't get back equal value for him, and he barely played him. So I think.
All right, and an interesting tweet that you mentioned as well on SportsZone last night. Stephen A. Smith, some controversy with him.
Yeah, he appeared to drop the N-word.
Again?
For the second time.
What a moron.
So, yeah.
He's still employed.
Yeah, he's still employed. And no punishment, which is bizarre because he denied that he said anything. ESPN said, yeah, we believe that he didn't say anything. But when on the cable re-air, they bleeped out whatever he said. So it's like, all right, so you're admitting he said something wrong, but you don't think he did say something wrong, so why would you bleep it out? It's just completely ridiculous.
Anything gets bleeped on, especially on ESPN, which hosts like the Little League World Series and the X Games, and you have this clown going around spreading his mouth out. Luckily, we have no obscene gestures or absurdities on this show, Back Radio Live from the Tavern. But also, quick shout out to the men's basketball team. They start their quest for Major League title for the first time since 2009 with a revamped physical team, said Coach Jeff Jones yesterday at the annual Chalk Talk. My Jaron Berman impression. He wants to play a more slow-down, rough-style physical defense as Stephen Lumpkins has returned. Are you excited for that, B-Flow?
I think I am.
Will
always,
you be there? Halloween
year.
Night.
Every year. Always excited for AU.
But of course, yep, that will do it here from the Tavern. Very special edition show. From all of us here at Fanatic Radio. And for example, folks, go to bflow360.com, read his blog, he has some good NBA analysis. Go to facebook.com/Fanatic Radio to watch the Varsity Dr. Collins celebration. But from Tavern, we are saying so long and vaya con Dios for my roommate, Jose Saldana. We'll see you next week as we're going to try another experiment, as Mel Gardner will be live from Texas Motor Speedway Media Center. People just keeping it locked, hopefully not blown away by the hurricane. Sandy, it's an interesting name for a hurricane.
Yeah.
Once again, this is Fanatic Radio on Block Talk Radio saying so long. We'll see you next week.